Yeah.
In the presentation over there, so let me switch back.
Just tell me when to switch slides. Do you want it up here, or do you want me to just close this?
Yep.
She's gonna control it though.
Okay.
Chad, it's in black and white. Welcome, Vito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Vito Gigoloni, I'm a member of the industry committee that was formed. Basically, just wanted to remind the council that the council did reconvene a capacity committee. And I believe there were a couple of meetings of the capacity committee. I was at one of them, and it was basically a recommendation of the capacity committee that a buyout would be something that would best come from industry first. Let industry get together and come up with something and put it forward. And also that was a result of a C grant study that was done industry should come up with a buyout concept first and work it that way. Also, this is a legislatively enabled buyout that we're looking at. There are several reasons for that. Magnuson authorized buyouts are very difficult and tedious, and the timing would probably not work out well with current regulations that are pending. Legislatively enabled buyout would be something that could happen in less than a year. So basically, in response to the C grant and the council capacity committee, we've got a group of folks together, and I'll just go through the slideshow. Frank has about 26 slides, pretty general, quick. Do you want me to just run through it, give a quick overview, and then go back for questions? Or?
Yeah, I'd go all the way through. We'll take questions at the end.
Yep.
Go to the second slide. Oh, I do. Look at that. Magic. So the capacity committee was formed in November of 2005. We've got members from New Jersey to Maine. And basically, Mass DMF supplied some staff. There was some funding secured, and that was utilized for this. David Borden was asked by the committee to serve as a chair for the meetings. We've had various meetings, and I'd also like to point out, people want to take note, that the website address is nebuyout.org, and all of the committee notes and meeting summaries, this prospectus, and any upcoming stuff, as well as the locations and dates of the regional meetings, are all on that website. So that'd be why a buyout? That was a gloss the bumper sticker, I guess. Where else? Basically, folks are looking at the fishery shrinking. I probably would reword this slide, but getting into the basics of the presentation, an overview of it is that, the strategy was to come up with the goals, and then the components are in the perspectives document, and the timeline is something that would has a separate slide here too. We've had two experiences in this fishery on buybacks or buyouts. The past ones were in a whole different dynamic of the fishery. They were more of financial assistance than they were an intent to reduce capacity. You know, this one is going to be industry-led and industry-funded. The past were based on government appropriations. This one is specifically designed to improve the health of the fishery. So it's a different regulatory climate. As we said, in the past, the buybacks dealt with attempting to buy high-output operations based on revenue, but it was still wide open with an almost infinite amount of latent effort sitting ready to be bought and reactivated. So although there were some positive results to those buyouts, they were relatively ineffective overall because of the availability of latent effort. Since the settlement agreement in Amendment 13, I think we've got a pretty limited amount of capacity now that we known to be dealt with and a limited amount of latent effort. There's four objectives, and again, I'd just like to point out this is a moving document, a changing document. It's more or less in its infancy stage. This is the result of a meeting of a relatively small group, and we're putting this out for public comment at this point. But right now, the four objectives were to permanently reduce fishing capacity in the fishery, provide those who wish, the second was to provide those wishing to leave the fishery a legitimate and financially sensible way of doing so. Third was to preserve the essential character of the New England groundfish fleet, and basically by doing that, it's just by not targeting any one gear type or size class or geography for the buyout. And of course, this one has to, where it's a government loan, we'll be asking the government to lend the money to the industry. We've got to show a business plan that ensures that the benefits will justify the costs to those that remain. The prospectus that is available online, and maybe some of you have printouts of, is broken down into three basic sections. The strategy was to focus on capacity and not history. In other words, we had a qualifying baseline or for effective effort in Amendment 13. There's a wide range of how that effort has been used, even though a day is a day right now. So we recognize this, and there is still, to some extent, the ability to sell a high output vessel and purchase a low output vessel, and thus offset some of the benefits. So there's a conscious effort to this to attempt to buy more from the bottom and get the most effective effort bang for the buck, so to speak, is the idea. And then the thought is that when the stocks rebuild, the fishery will be more profitable, and most of the latent effort, if not all, you know, would be converted to active effort. So the strategy is not to pay for capacity in other fisheries as well. That was a conscious decision of the committee that we would be borrowing money and paying it back, and it would be based solely on groundfish revenues. We do deal with that in a different way, but as far as the monies go, the money is specifically allocated to purchasing groundfish permits and not the vessels. But we do recognize that the effort increases in other fisheries would be unacceptable, and that some vessels may not want to retire. In other words, they may want to sell their groundfish permits and rights altogether, but they're very heavily engaged in other fisheries already, and it really doesn't result in a net shift in effort. We attempt to deal with that in the current prospectus. So these are the next items. It'll be a federal loan to the ground fishery. It's going to be dealing with A, B, and C days. So only the limited access permits. And the loan repayment right now, based on the revenue projections that were done, is approximating a 3% of the gross revenues as a fee right now, depending on the interest rate received and the amount of money borrowed. 5% is the cap under Magnuson. So that the total loan right now is estimated between 75 and 150. I think right now at about 110, we anticipate we could see as much as a 30% reduction in the capacity units that we're using for this right now. And it's a 30-year payback. There'll be two referendas. The initial one is non-binding that we expect could happen as early as midsummer. If, you know, at the end of these regional meetings, we're at a point where the committee's going to meet again sometime in the summer after those meetings and determine what changes would be done to the prospectus. Then the second one would be a binding vote, and we would have to have at least 51% of the votes in favor in order to move forward. The votes would be weighted based on A days receiving four votes per day, B days two, and C days one. And then there's an example there. It'd be a reverse auction. There's a formula being used right now just to have a baseline for evaluation. That's still being discussed, but right now there is one in the document that we're using for public comment purposes. But it'll still go with the lowest bid based on a ratio of the evaluation formula, and the people that have the best scores would go first. It would be binding upon acceptance right now. And you can't change your vote and permit after the bid is submitted. So once you lock in, that vote and permit are locked into the buyout. The bids would be ranked based on a somewhat complex, but it's the capacity units is similar to something that the government's used in the past, where you take your length, horsepower, with a fairly complicated formula, and you come up with a per-day effective effort or capacity unit, and then you multiply that by the A and B days. Since A and B days were qualified effort, and we're just using that A-B day split depending upon stocks of concern. So that would be the base multiplier. Then there's a catch history multiplier in it in order to broaden the range of the buyback participation. We have an aging fleet, not just with vessels, but, manpower. And there may be someone that's got a high history vessel who has had enough with the fishery, and we wanted to have, some type of bonus in there so that that person would be recognized and get more money necessarily than a paper permit, even though the capacity of both permits are the same. It would be based on allocated A and B days, and you get the ratio of the bid. Won't go over that again. Highest to lowest. Okay, this is the non-groundfish permit portion of it, which you can imagine took up quite a bit of the committee time. At this point, we've got a few alternatives. Alternative one would be surrender just the groundfish permit only, and then, we've got to deal with the impacts of the fisheries. I should say alternative one does not deal with the impacts of the fisheries. The other is to surrender all federal permits. And then three is really a combination of one and two, where what we've done is set a threshold so that, say, a vessel was into squid, mackerel, butterfish fisheries, and their revenues from groundfish was less than 25% of their gross revenues, then basically they're already pretty much fully engaged in another fishery and should not be expected to surrender their entire, vessel and all federal permits, with their value only being generated by the groundfish. So they would have an option to sell their groundfish only. And then if someone was below that threshold, where 25% or more of their revenues was from groundfish trips, then all of their endorsements would go with it. Those are the two options under three. And these are the other limited access moratorium permits that were identified by the committee as those that would probably have value over and above groundfish. And right now the thought is that to expedite things, that we would be folks in these other fisheries, as well as the assistance of this committee, would be seeking an appropriation from the government. This would be not an industry-funded portion and not to be paid back. They'd be looking for a similar to past buybacks, a way to be reimbursed. And what they would do is you take whatever these qualifying permits were, in those directed fisheries, 1.5 times the average revenue of 2003-2005. There's a reason for that baseline. Had to do with Amendment 13 and leasing and transferring and that type of thing. So this is the way right now that the committee is looking at dealing with those valuable non-groundfish permits. Under the options for, I think this is for the, yeah, for the vessels, disposition of the vessels themselves, one would be unrestricted future use of the vessels and the other would be restricted use or scrapping. We basically had three different options, and I think all of them could apply at once here. You could either relegate the West Coast buyback to non-fisheries use. We find that to be pretty limited use of vessels, especially some of the vessels we've got here in the Northeast. Another idea that's in the document right now is a scrapping voucher, one that what we're looking at is vessels of similar baseline. You could, if you were a selling vessel that had a pretty valuable, fairly new vessel, then you could seek out a permit holder that wanted to stay in the business and had an older vessel of similar baselines, and you would exchange those out. So the person that has the aging vessel would accept the voucher to have his vessel scrapped in lieu of the newer one, and he would pay in a private purchase. The person that's participating in the buyback, he would purchase that vessel. So what we're seeing is that's a way for the fishing industry to not have to be buying valuable metal and scrapping it when we have unsafe vessels on the water. This is an opportunity for safety for vessels to upgrade. And the other is a voluntary scrapping program that's based on a per-foot basis. So someone doesn't even want to go through all of this. They would be paid, I believe it's $500 a foot, which covers pretty much any type of vessels to be scrapped and disposed of properly. The sea days, again, took up some of the committee time and discussion. Right now, what is being put out there is $150 per sea day held would be a flat fee payment. What that comes down to is if every sea day were purchased, it would come to $5.7 million, so that's included in the buyback, and that would be fee payers over the years will be paying for that. So that's a part of the loan that's budgeted right now. Sea day permits cannot be reactivated until the buyout loan is repaid. This is something that, you know, based on the loan, one of the concerns would be if fee payers were to put this out there and pay for sea days, then before that loan is paid off, if sea days that were not sold got reactivated, then it would undo or bite into what the positive impacts of the buyback were meant to be. The timeline is, I think we've basically already gone over that. We'd obtained congressional legislation at the earliest fall or into the winter of 2006. Then we would ask NOAA to send a letter soliciting binding bids in the spring of 2007. When that comes back, the minimum criteria is that we're removing 30% of the effort and that it comes within the budget. Both of those criteria would have to be met, and then that would be put out as a referenda. And, again, at least 50% of the bids would have – I mean, of the votes would have to be in favor of the buyout. And then the payouts would be issued as early as the fall of 2007. That's it.
Okay. Any questions on the presentation? Jim?
Thank you, Vito. I have just a couple of questions that relate to how you would implement this. And they're really, as an example, on page 10, you have three alternatives for surrendering the groundfish permit. One of those alternatives is the surrendering the groundfish permit only. How would you, assuming that you passed everything, how would you accomplish that? Wouldn't that require some council action to deal with that because of the permit splitting restrictions? I have another question after that as well.
Jim, it's a great question. It's been bounced around by the committee, but it'd be a matter of reducing the days at sea off the permit. So if the days at sea were reduced down, you know, I don't know about the legalities of keeping the endorsement on there, but it wouldn't really be very usable without the days. So I guess in that context, it would be a day at sea buyback.
Okay. Pat?
May I have a second?
Sounded like Pat wanted to respond.
Yeah, I think it is a good question, although I don't think in this situation it's actually a problem. The vessel owner can voluntarily relinquish their groundfish permit, and the permit just goes away. And that's what we did in the last buyouts that we had. But I think there are some other provisions that would require council action, like the sea permits cannot be reactivated until the buyout loan is repaid, that type of thing. So there are provisions that would require. Yeah.
Well, that was my other question. So it's yeah. Just in terms of how yeah. Do you prevent reactivation of sea days?
We anticipated the council. That's one of the reasons, you know, this is really in the early stages, is to start to bounce this off the council, because without council cooperation on something like that, the whole thing could be undone. There are more sea days out there right now than we have A and B days combined. I believe that's an accurate statement. So there's no question. I mean, this is a loan from the government, and, you know, someone with a straight face is going to have to show that there are really going to be benefits to the people that remain and pay a fee. So it's something that needs to be dealt with. It was one of the first things that we were told when we went to Washington you know, you got to deal with the sea days, you got to deal with latent effort, and you got to deal with what's going to happen with the vessels and other fisheries.
Thank you.
Okay. Rip?
Thank you. Jim asked several of the questions that I also had questions on. Is there anything else that you think that you will be coming back to the council for any sort of council action on, and as far as the buyout's concerned?
Honestly, Rip, I'd say yes. Not knowing specifically what those are, I think as this morphs along, we've only had one public meeting, and it was more of a pilot meeting. It was before the mailing even went out. There was a mailing that went out to all permit holders. It was very preliminary, and it really wasn't well attended. There's one going on right now, I believe, in Portland, and David's up there. So we see the committee meeting again and refining this document, and we'll be able to tell more how much council involvement we need on that.
Yeah, Vito, just a couple of comments and maybe one question. One, I think we ought to look at the sea days in a different aspect. It's going to take council action to activate sea days. Right now, they're permanently inactive until we do something. So I think it's a little bit the other way than what Pat said. We would have to activate them before. So as long as we don't, it's not as bad. But the one thing that's concerned me, I'm in support of this program, you know that, is the 30% drop dead date. I have a little bit of a problem seeing a line in the sand, because, you know, we've discussed that if you come up with 28%, you want the program to not go forward, or if you come up with 29%, you want it to not go forward. That's just a comment. And then generally I want to thank the committee for doing a good job of putting together a complex issue in a way that people can understand it, and I hope this is an opportunity for the industry. Thanks.
Yes, two things. I, too, want to compliment the industry for getting together and addressing a very important issue, capacity in the groundfish fleet. And those issues and that type of program can only be developed from the bottom up like you've done. So congratulations. And the other thing, though, about the Sea Day program, you know, I'm thinking to myself that at the earliest, we could probably have something done through the council for implementation in 2008, you know, a year later. If we start, we're going to talk in September about starting an amendment and the focus of that amendment. And that could probably be implemented sometime in 2008 if the council decides to add sea days. But my question is, based on Jim's comment, how critical is it to, do you think, to the industry that, one, it's a legal requirement already, or two, they recognize that the council would have to change it, so that's really not a threat. Do you see what I'm saying? Is it going to be a showstopper that in order to get bids in, it better be codified?
It's definitely one of those catch-22s. Yeah. I mean, you can't tie the hands of the council, a future council, and we recognize that. But at the same time, there's going to be some commitment for the loan to the government, and it's going to be difficult to tell them, look, we can pay back $125 million, and the people that are remaining and committed to do that are going to have a benefit to it. So it's sort of a catch-22. Anything can be legislated in, you know, as far as tying the loan to say you can't reactivate late an effort that's not attached to somewhat what this buyout is using as a formula for capacity. But we got to get there.
Well, if this was implemented through separate legislation, the legislation could actually specify that the council cannot reactivate C days until the end of the loan program. So that's maybe even a cleaner way to do that kind of thing. And I just wanted to add my support to what people have said, that I want to really commend the industry. I think you've done a great job of thinking through a lot of the details and the issues, and this is, you know, these are very difficult kind of programs that just absolutely have to come from the industry. So as I said, I want to commend the industry and say if there's anything that Fishery Service can do to help, please let us know.
Thank you. Two questions on latent effort and shifting effort. Just wondering if maybe you could just talk a little bit more about that, since in recent years all the days that have been allocated haven't been used, so there still is, there's latent effort out there. So where's the break even as far as actually starting to reduce active capacity? So that's one question. And then the other question is maybe if you could just talk a little bit more about how you're going to prevent a shift in effort. And maybe that's something that's still in discussion. You have all those different options that you're considering right now. But those are kind of the two big things that I have questions about.
On the latent effort that we currently have, the buyback is intentionally, we do have at least a limited universe that we're dealing with. I think it's 42,000 A days. It'll be down to probably 39 or something with framework 42. So at 39,000 days, we're using 30,000, you know, the latent pool. We're looking at the intent of this buyback is less a trying to achieve conservation in the near term as it is long term. So we're seeing the whole 40,000 days as being the same, based upon their length, horsepower, and allocated days, that's their real fishing capacity, which is why the formulas that are being used is probably going to tempt more people from the latent pool to sell, and that is going to permanently remove capacity in that way. May not have the immediate full impact of a 30% reduction in tomorrow's effort, you know, like tomorrow as in being calendar year 2008, but certainly in the future, it's going to have an impact.
And on a shift in effort to other fisheries, can you maybe you can just talk a little bit more about some of the options and the discussions that you've had about whether someone would relinquish their groundfish permit only, or if the limitations that might be placed on the vessel that had the groundfish permit after it participates in the buyout?
One of the things we wanted to do is to try to recognize that we do have a pretty diverse group on the committee, is try to recognize all different businesses' perspective of this. And if you're a permit that is very diversified and is making substantial amount of their gross revenue in the year in other fisheries, then you're basically saying that person's not even eligible for the buyback at all. Because it would be, we're basing all the values on groundfish only. So what we've done is come up with that. If they are valuable permits, that means they're being used, they're generating income now, they would be able to sell those permits as well. It's almost a separate bid that would be based on their revenue. If they're currently generating over 75% of their income in other fisheries, then we're looking at that as not being a substantial shift in effort. So those vessels could sell just their groundfish endorsements and remain in the fisheries that they're in now. The other ones, if you don't qualify for either of those, then all your federal permits go with it anyway. There won't be splitting off. You know, if you've got a non-used fluke and moratorium black sea bass permit, it's probably that's going to go with the buyback.
Okay.
No, I just wanted to add my name to the list of people who appreciate the efforts of the Capacity Reduction Committee. It's a job well done, still a work in progress. As Vito said, public hearings are being held, public meetings are being held to get feedback from the industry. My agency played a role, a relatively small role. We helped facilitate, but really this is an industry initiative. And to repeat, we're appreciative of it. Chad provided some invaluable staff support, number crunching and all of that. So keep up the good work, Vito and company. It does. The committee indeed is comprised of individuals with a great deal of expertise, a great deal of knowledge regarding these fisheries, ground fish as well as other fisheries. A lot of motivation there, and I look forward to the next step in this process.
Okay, Dave, we've got to wrap this up with a couple minutes.
I just had a couple questions. I mean, first of all, I think you guys have done a tremendous amount of work here, and it's darn impressive. The payback, the people who stay and pay back, do they pay back only on ground fish revenues or on all fish revenues or fish?
Whatever? I believe where it's being, originally it was projected as just ground fish, but then it was all revenue generated on a day at sea. I stand to be corrected by Chad on that, but I believe we're looking at all revenues generated on a day at sea because there are a lot of fisheries and non-ground fish that are using. You know.
Okay. My second question was, and I'm a little bit unclear on the referenda. I understand the first part of it, the non-binding one, but the second binding vote that says pass-fail, are people going to get to vote on all the options? In other words, are the people going to get to vote on designing the package, or is that going to be left up to the committee? Because I think a lot of people, their vote will ultimately hinge on what package is out there. If they, if they vote for a specific package, they may be in favor of the plan. But if they're voting on something that may stick them with a package that they don't think will either be in the best interest of those who stay or will cost those that stay, as an example, too much money with not enough benefit, your referendum might not pass. So that's a pretty crucial element of this.
My understanding of it is, even though it's non-binding, the first referenda is the one that would take care of that. In other words, following the industry meetings, the regional meetings, the committee will convene again, make changes to the prospectus document, and that will go out as the referenda, and people would vote yay or nay on that based upon whether they think they would like to be a payer or they would like to sell, or maybe they're not sure which one they want to do yet, but they're gonna either endorse the idea or the plan or not. At that point, we still won't know whether we've removed the capacity yet because there's no bids. So it'll be the template and the concept of the plan that would be approved by the industry then. It's non-binding because then we have to go to the legislative phase and try to get the legislation passed and the funding.
But the template will be, instead of three options of what to do with your boat or something, it'll be one option. You'll either have to scrap it or whatever, and your permits will either all your permits go or none of your permits go other than ground fish. I mean, it'll be one thing that people are voting on. It won't be all these subsections so that they really won't know where they stand.
Yeah, certainly the ones that have to be either or, the committee will have to determine based on the feedback, if we get the right feel for it, which ones to eliminate and have in the final. There are others here that have alternatives 1, 2, and 3 that can remain that way because each permit holder, you may say, I'll take the scrapping voucher and swap out because my vote's valuable, or I'll take the $500 a foot, or I'll just take the permit off the vessel and sell the permit only. You know, so there may be three options in there that stay.
Okay. Well, I think the committee's doing excellent work. Keep it going and hopefully stay on track.
All right.
Meet your goal. So, all right, we're going to break for lunch. And I think seeing how everybody has to drive, and I'm hoping we're getting a little ahead of schedule this afternoon. Be back in 20 of.
in Washington, was it last week or the week before,